Franklin joining me real soon. We're going to get into the waterfront. We're going to cover it. We're going to talk the SAVE Act, what he's been doing up there in D.C. We're also going to talk the latest Ukraine war escalation, which is something that, you know, it always makes me super sad to see what's coming out of the Russia-Ukraine war with, you know, conservatively 1.5 million people dead, including both sides. It is truly a tragedy. And we pray for peace. That's what I've always done. That is the reason why I got back into politics, geopolitics, covering media and doing, doing a show in general, is because I saw what was happening in the Ukraine war. And I was subscribed to channels like Due Dissidence. I was subscribed to channels like Dialogue Works, Judge Napolitano. If you don't follow Judge Knapp, if you don't sub to him on YouTube, that's Judge Napolitano. That is like the best information besides InfoWars you're going to get anywhere else. Maybe even, you know, better guests sometimes, because when I call people to book them, this is why I'm so thankful to Ivan. This is why I'm so thankful to Stein, so thankful to Joe Kent and others. You know, who is it? It's just little old me doing the interview, right? But I stand on the shoulders of giants, both my father and the other people that I've admired throughout the years who do great media, like Judge Knapp and like Dialogue Works, like Nima and many others, of course. It's only through them that I learned about what was happening in Ukraine. And, you know, I paid attention to mainstream media. I was following things. I was seeing, you know, oh, the war started, whatever. I watched the Alex Jones show, so I knew it was going to happen because, of course, my dad predicted the invasion, right? We all know that. But, you know, it was only once I started hearing about the casualties, started hearing about the press ganging, the drone attacks, all of it, that I started to really say, hey, man, you know, I got to back somebody that's against this. And that's why I backed Donald J. Trump in 2024. That's why I pulled the cross out of my shirt and told people to vote for Donald J. Trump in 2024, is because I believed he was going to pull Zelensky's funding. I thought he was going to pull his Starlink. And I thought we wouldn't see things like this anymore because they need a peace deal. The war needs to be over. 1.5 million people dead. Ukraine's been hollowed out. It's now a BlackRock project. Larry Fink goes over there with, of course, Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff to meet with Zelensky and literally divide up the country like a cake, like one of those old political cartoons you'd see of like Europe and Africa, right? So I'm going to be joined by Ivan Ranklin now covering all this. We've got like 2 minutes left in this segment, so I just want to cover things here, and we'll throw him in after the break there, a little bit janky. But with all this being said, with all this happening across the world, this is why it's so important to have your number one issue, besides being constitutionalist, pro-American, especially from America, being anti-war. The supreme war crime is the initial war of aggression, right? We know this. Now, they would say, oh, we have to defend ourselves, Russia invades. Well, we set up something called the Maidan coup in that country in 2014. You can go watch video of Victoria Nuland, John McCain, and many other deep state monsters literally watching the Azov battalion take over the country as they're drinking wine from a high rise. Okay? And who do they install? They installed Little Zelensky. Now, who is Little Zelensky? Little Zelensky is this interesting character creature. He played the president on TV like Kevin Spacey, House of Cards. And that's how they were able to get enough people to like him to put him in power. So you've got this media creation, deep state creation, Victoria Nuland, John McCain creation. And what happens? They bomb the people in the Donbass that are ethnically Russian. They tell the people in the Donbass, hey, you don't speak Russian when you go to court. You don't speak Russian when you go to school. And that's discrimination. They also do terrorism on them and drop bombs on their heads. And that's why Putin came in. That's why Putin came in. And hey, Zelensky agreed with him because the Istanbul Peace Accords, he was about to sign them a month after the war started. It was only because Boris Johnson flew to Ukraine and promised to back with NATO, back them to the hilt, with our help, back them to the hilt, that we've now entered this 4-year-long war where 1.5 million people have died. I'm going to get into all of it after the break with Ivan Ranklin, the Ukraine war escalation. I've got some truly crazy, really sad, harrowing footage to show you guys, and then we'll get into the SAVE Act, what he's doing, and all of it. Really appreciate everyone being here. Share the live link, share the feed, retweet, repost, AJN Live. Thank you all, and I'll see you after the break.
Decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Live with Ivan Ranklin, retired Green Beret, constitutional lawyer, and independent investigator. Thank you so much, Ivan, for joining me. We were talking a little bit on the break there. We're both a little unhappy, very unhappy about what's going on up in D.C. with the president of the Senate. What's going on there?
Yeah, with the president of the Senate. Absolutely, Rex. Thanks for having me. So a lot of people don't even know that that's a position that exists. So let me just set the stage on what the president of the Senate is. So the president of the Senate is the senior most constitutional officer within the U.S. Senate chambers. Okay. The senior most, above the president pro tem, which is traditionally the senior senator that is serving from the majority party. And then above the Senate majority leader,
right,
which is a partisan position that is voted in by the majority party. And then you have a minority leader, which is the leader of the minority party. So those are the four, quote unquote, quasi leaders of the Senate. And two of them are not in the Constitution, meaning the Senate majority leader and the Senate minority leader. And two actually are in the Constitution. One is the president pro tem, which I just said was traditionally the senior ranking senator. And then the one above that is the president of the Senate.
Right.
Now, the unique thing about the president of the Senate, that individual is a dual branch officer, meaning the president of the Senate is the senior most senator in the legislative branch, and it so happens to be coinciding with being the vice president, this number two guy in the executive branch. Most unique position. I argue it's the second most powerful position in the United States of America after the Speaker of the House. So on the House side, again, a legislative branch entity.
Right.
You have the Speaker of the House, which is a constitutional position, and it is separate from the non-constitutional positions, the partisan positions known as the majority leader in the House and the minority leader in the House. Then you also have a majority whip and a minority whip. So you have five, quote unquote, leadership positions in the House, one being constitutional, and then you have four in the Senate, two being constitutional positions.
Right.
Okay. Now that I set that framework constitutionally, on the House side, we know that Speaker of the House gets to appoint the sergeant at arms in the House side because he's the senior most constitutional, or he or she, right, is the senior most constitutional official there. And then on the Senate side, it's quite unclear because since the beginning inception of the Senate, the president of the Senate actually exerted a lot of power, the vice president, that is. So it's the vice president when you're not in the Senate chambers. So, for example, in today's climate, J.D. Vance is the vice president. But the moment he steps foot, when he decides to step foot in the U.S. Senate chambers, he becomes the president of the Senate.
So it's almost
like
he's amphibious.
Powerful, influential position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you can call it that. I mean, but yeah, it's the only position that carries essentially that dual branch role.
Sure.
And so when you're the president of the Senate, I argue that you take the role as the senior most constitutional officer, and thus you can appoint the Senate parliamentarian. You can appoint the Senate sergeant at arms. You can go ahead and force all inaction or action in the Senate. And what does that look like? Looks like we have a freeze here.
No, you're good. I see you great.
Okay. So if J.D. Vance steps foot in the Senate chambers, I don't know, like now, drives over from the Naval Observatory, or if he's at the White House right now. I mean, that would be, I don't know, right. 20 minutes from now, right? Approximately. Right. He steps foot in the Senate chambers. And this is what I said back in November, December after the election. That as soon as he became the vice president, he then becomes the president of the Senate on January 20th of last year. And the very first thing that he should have done was appoint your parliamentarian, appoint your Senate sergeant at arms, and then get to work. What does that mean, get to work? That means the Senate sergeant at arms forces a changeover in Capitol Police leadership so that we have a general counsel that comes in and actually exposes the planning, actions on the objective, and then the post cover-up of January 6th. All communications, all documents, all the weaponization that occurred from that general counsel of the U.S. Capitol Police on all 1,575 J6ers and beyond. Because right. That's who initiated the weaponization. Not the FBI, not the DOJ, not the courts. The weaponization started with the legislative branch. I'm going to say this until pretty much I die because no one really pays attention to this. But that's essentially where the weaponization starts. And the way you unravel that weaponization is you have to understand the insider baseball game of the Capitol, meaning the legislative branch, control of the Capitol Police Board.
Hold on. I want to get a clip here. I want you to explain this to people. Go into that in depth. Explain how it truly works.
The Senate sergeant at arms is appointed by the leader of the Senate. The House sergeant at arms is appointed by the Speaker of the House. So then every year you have a House sergeant at arms that's the chair of the Capitol Police Board. And then the other year it's the Senate sergeant at arms. So as the president of the Senate, you appoint your Senate sergeant at arms. You get to control the Capitol Police Board, and thus you control the Capitol Police
right. And
whether or not you're going to release any and all information related to the investigations, the criminal referrals, the planning for January 6th, the actions of January 6th, and its cover-up.
And he can do that right now. He can do that right now, this very moment. He can go up to Capitol Hill, like you say, and initiate that process?
He can initiate that process, but it won't be until January 3rd of next year that the Senate Sergeant at Arms becomes the chair of the Capitol Police Board. Right now, it's the House Sergeant at Arms. So J.D. Vance has already squandered his first year. I told him to do this last year. He didn't do it. So again, the Senate Sergeant at Arms position was that chair of the Capitol Police Board. And you can fact check and law check everything I say out there, all the ankle biters. Look up Title II U.S. Code, Chapter 29. It lays out the Capitol Police Board, the Capitol Police creation, and all the other everything I'm talking about right now. And take a look specifically at Sections 1967, Paragraph B, and 1979, Paragraph B, for some key issues that need to be addressed there. And 1967B lays out the jurisdiction of the Capitol Police. 1979B talks about who is in the position to release security information, meaning CCTV footage, IT information, etc., related to the Capitol.
Right.
So I digress. But on January 3rd of next year, regardless of what happens with this election, even if the Democrats win the Senate, even if the Democrats win the House, both, the president of the Senate remains, and that's J.D. Vance, the vice president. And then when he walks into the Senate chambers, he can then appoint a sergeant at arms. And then on January 3rd, that's the statutory date when the chair of the Capitol Police Board becomes a Senate sergeant at arms. Okay.
Sure.
So that addresses the J6 issue. And I think that if he did this, he becomes the clear front runner going into 2028 amongst the J6 community and everybody that was weaponized related to J6, which is the entire InfoWars network, the entire Lindell TV network, many networks, right?
Well, this is the thing.
Real America's Voice, et cetera.
We don't feel defended, right? And this is why J.D. Vance is not doing enough. The whole administration has not been doing enough, on the weaponization of justice, right? Like, this is core to this operation.
The de-weaponization of our government, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the takeover of the corporate bureaucrat lawyer class that has really subsumed Washington, in my opinion. Ivan, you've been up there not just pushing for this, but also pushing for the SAVE Act as well. You sent me some videos. Maybe we can get into this. Why isn't there more urgency on this?
No, it's great. You make a great point and a great question. And when you said it's the lawyer corporate class. So the most powerful position on the Capitol grounds is the general counsel of the Capitol Police. That's the one that weaponized everything on January 6th. And then to pivot over to the SAVE Act, on a separate note, as the president of the Senate, I would recommend that J.D. Vance walk in there right now and say, all right, we're going to convene the Senate body and chambers. And he could stand there at the rostrum controlling the Senate and tell the the uniparty Democrats and Republicans and tell them, guess what? Nothing happens in this body until the following takes place.
Right.
Number one, we hold a publicly facing vote on who you want as your Senate majority leader and minority leader.
Right.
That doesn't happen. Remember last time? They kept it under closed doors and under wraps because these senators don't want you to know who they vote for to be the Senate Majority Leader, John Thune. Because when they see how you voted, you're going to face a reckoning back home in your state because most of your constituents absolutely do not want a Senate Majority Leader Thune, who is a lackey of slash replacement of Mitch McConnell, right?
Yep, the turtle.
So that's number one. Exactly. Number two, if they want to pass the Save America Act, and then like this whole 60 vote rule on the filibuster, this is a creation of the partisan structure of the Senate, not a constitutional position. So the constitutional position known as the president of the Senate can go in and say, you know what? We're going to hold the vote.
Right.
And if it's a 50-50 split, then I'm the tiebreak. But that's all that's required in order to pass the Save Act. And if members of the Senate try to reject and refute President of the Senate, J.D. Vance, then he's just going to stand up there and say, okay, great. Then we're not going to do anything. We're not going to pass the FISA bill 702. We're not going to pass any more spending bills.
Right.
We're not going to confirm any. We're not going to do anything. And guess what? J.D. Vance is what, mid-40s? I think he can outlast any septuagenarian or octogenarian in the Senate chambers physically.
Yes.
In terms of, you want a filibuster? I think JD's in the position physically, physiologically, to completely own them. They'll just be falling asleep. They'll be falling over. Mitch McConnell and others are going to be sent to the hospital because they're going to be dehydrated. They're not going to be able to withstand this battle, this intellectual constitutional battle in the Senate chambers. And it's really on JD to do it. It doesn't require Donald Trump's authorization or permission. This is an authority and power that rests solely with J.D. Vance as the president of the Senate. So he doesn't need permission. He doesn't need authority. Oh, I got it. No, just do it.
Yeah, the mandate's defend the, already defend there, the right? issues that we voted for, right? Like, that's what we're calling for. Defend the things that we voted for in 2024. We want that, right? And, you know, I played clips in the first hour of J.D. making some very strong statements about Lebanon, making statements about, hey, Ben Gavir, not naming him, but that's the guy he's calling out. You better stop. We're the only superpower that's on y'all's side. And you better realize that real soon. We haven't heard this language the entire third term or second term, whatever you want to call it. We haven't heard this language at all. So for me, I think the impetus is on JD to really prove himself and to go out there into the wilderness, like into the lion's den, and to go do this and go give the filibuster. And you're right. And this is a point I always make to people when they go, it's so blackpilling. It's so doomer. We're not able to get motion. We got, you know, the guy who beat Thomas Massey. We got all, you know, these, you know, grown in a lab type candidates. Ed Gowron is the guy's name. What are we going to do? I tell you guys, just like you said, J.D. Vance is a younger guy. We're going to get new people. We're going to get people that are younger, people that'll listen to the electorate. Because right now, the older people, those octogenarians you talk about that are going to hopefully we'll get J.D. in there to filibuster against them. They can't stand up to it. Right. Go into that a little bit.
Right. They can't stand up to that physically and intellectually. I actually yesterday, I bumped into one of the senators, I think Hoven, if I'm not mistaken, and asked him this specific scenario. What would you do and what would be your response if J.D. Vance actually did this? And I kind of alluded to it when I in the hallways, I bumped into Senator Mike Lee, who I think is the one that probably understands the constitutional dynamics and parliamentary procedures and maneuvers closest to what I'm advocating right now, because he's already spoken a little bit about it.
Right.
If you want to play the clip, we can kind of break
we'll go
that
into the clip
down.
Give a little intro. What are you about to show us here, Ivan?
Yeah, so what I just explained, I asked Senator John Hoven if what would he do if J.D. Vance came in there and essentially overpowered the Senate as president of the Senate and dictated that the vote on the SAVE Act would be voted on publicly, and all it would require is 50 votes. Because at the end of the day, it's, again, the Senate Majority Leader, the Senate Minority Leader are partisan positions, not constitutional positions. So he could overpower the rules of the Senate and just have a constitutional vote on a law,
right,
which only requires a 50-50 plus one. And that could apply to every single confirmation. If JD wants to be the nominee in 2028, and overpower Marco Rubio in the court of public opinion, he could just totally dominate by saying, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and take charge. I'm going to go ahead and do this. And I'm also going to apply this to a vote on every single ambassadorial confirmation. Because guess what? The Secretary of State isn't even telling the president and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman and the Senate Majority Leader that he only has like 15% of the nominations put forward that are confirmed to be ambassadors. Instead, we have basically 80 to 90% of the ambassadors out there throughout the world are Biden holdovers. So if the people that are saying, oh, Marco Rubio is great, guess what? 10, 15, 20%? That's an F, buddy. So JD could force confirmations. On the accountability front of the 94 U.S. attorneys throughout the country, we only have a few confirmations. That's where we get our accountability, America, is through the U.S. attorneys. Like I said in the video that I also sent you, we don't even have, as far as I checked recently, we don't have U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. If we want to hold John Brennan and company and James Homey Comey and company and the weaponized CIA, the 51 spies who lied, and their entire ecosystem that is seizing documents from Tulsi Gabbard so that they're not disclosed, those that are freely treasoning still within our intel community, particularly the CIA, if we want to hold them to account, we probably want to have a U.S. attorney to criminally charge them for treason. But we don't even have that. Why? Because this White House is playing and they're not even playing checkers at this point.
Tic-tac-toe.
In terms of governing. They are playing jacks, if that.
Exactly. Tic-tac-toe, dude.
Tic-tac-toe is too advanced, bro.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that's so
if
insulting.
They want to play chess.
Yeah.
If they want to play chess on my chessboard, Rex, that I just laid out to you, and that's not my chessboard. I say that facetiously. It's America's chessboard known as the Constitution.
Yes.
Then you might want to have attorneys or those that look into the dynamics of how do you wield power? Because guess what? We gave you the power. Now exercise it.
Okay. So here's the thing that I look at, right? You're talking about chess. We'll use that analogy. It's like they have a computer that shows them the right moves. And they're like, I'm not moving the pieces. Like that's what we see a lot of. And I want to get into that next segment with you on Ukraine. I mean, I voted for Trump because I thought funding would be pulled on day one and little Zelensky would have to sign the peace treaty. We're not getting that. All of these things, like the Iran war, for an example, the 12-day war.
No, it's because the president is not the most powerful position in America.
What
even
is?
Though Donald Trump thought it was, even though most of America thought it was. No. In terms of foreign policy, you could argue a little bit. The most powerful position on the planet is the U.S. Speaker of the House. Because that individual allocates $7 trillion annually into the global economy. That's a little bit more than even Elon Musk, who's a trillionaire right now. He's only a $1 trillionaire, right? For his lifetime of business activities. The Speaker of the House allocates $7 trillion or so annually while the Speaker of the House. And then after that, the President of the Senate, if they leverage their power, can go ahead and decide on who gets confirmed in the cabinet and who doesn't, right?
Right.
And then it's really up to the President to understand those dynamics, to actually sit down with the Speaker, sit down with the President of the Senate. And if he wants, he can throw in John Thune in the mix in order to kind of leverage that.
Well, I do have a question.
Donald Trump knows how to make money for himself and his family, and he's good at it, right? He's a businessman. I haven't seen any modicum of governing prowess in the first term or the second term. It has solely been deep state is undefeated, and he remains winless. And when he starts to listen to folks that lay out the answer sheet for the 100% solution, even just taking a little bit of it, maybe we will secure a win or two so that, you know, he puts points on the scoreboard for America.
It's terrifying thought that the most powerful person in the country might be Mike Johnson. That's quite a scary thought. I didn't even think about it like that, but you're 100% right. Controlling the budget, controlling the appointments, all of it. This is what we're dealing with. These are who these people are. And, you know, I saw Mike Johnson come out and say, I forget what the thing was. He was going to cut funding somewhere, right? And you get a clip of him one day, mm-hmm. and then the next, it's like he's seen Casper the Friendly Ghost, except he wasn't so friendly, right? What what is up with Mike Johnson in the little bit of time we got left? You know, who's controlling this guy? Who's he party to, perhaps?
Yeah, so these are great questions. So my assessment of the whole situation, I think most of America realizes at this point after the Massey congressional race, which was the most expensive one. On one side, you have Bibi Netanyahu and Miriam Adelson that are essentially boxing in Donald Trump to do his do Bibi's bidding to for the, him to remain in power. And he leverages the last two campaign managers for Donald Trump to do his bidding. When I say he, Bibi, okay?
Right, right.
So Brad Parscale, the Trump camp, he was the digital director for Donald Trump in 2016, the campaign manager in 2020. Well, he is Bibi's foreign agent in order to promote Bibi's talking points in America through conservative media. I mean, that's what we know as far as a foreign agent registration, okay? On the other side, you have the other campaign manager from the 2024 campaign, Susie Wiles, who used to work for Bibi on his 2020 reelection campaign, that is essentially the liaison conduit on behalf of the big donor, Bibi-aligned, Miriam Adelson-aligned camp that right. ushered in the Donald Trump in his second term. And so Bibi is leveraging that entire ecosystem to place individuals that advise Donald Trump 100% on behalf of Bibi. And right. then he also leverages the Lindsey Grahams, flies him over to Israel to get advice on how to sweet talk and whisper sweet thoughts of manipulation into Donald Trump's ears, along with the Mark Levins,
yes.
and now the Laurel Loomers,
yes.
and then the Ben Shapiros. So that's one ecosystem. But when Donald Trump pivoted because he wants to have some sort of a peace deal, and he pivoted away from supporting keeping Bibi Netanyahu in power, what did Bibi do? He immediately ran over to his partners in the legislative branch. I already mentioned right. one, Lindsey Graham. He immediately leveraged the Israel lobby in order to be able to coerce, compel, and put fear in every single Republican by making an example of Thomas Massie that this is what happens when you go against Bibi Netanyahu. You know, the whole adage of those who bless Bibi will be blessed. Some people
right.
pronounce it those that bless Israel will be blessed, right? But really, let's face it, it's those that bless Miriam and Bibi will be blessed through financial.
Yes.
You just showed a few.
Yes, those
photos
those who help keep Bibi Netanyahu out of prison are blessed specifically. Like, and that's really like
exactly.
that's what the genocide's about. That's what the war's about. The propagation of it all. They're committing crimes over there. And if we look for 1 second and said, "Hey, we're paying for all this, and we can separate ourselves from it and focus on things at home and bring the country back," what? We're over here in the
right,
desert doing what? And like, this is why I love what Joe Kent said, just declare victory and go home, right? And it looks like we're doing a version of that. We can debate how well that's going to work out, how well that's going to go. I'm seeing a movement in American foreign and domestic policy for the first time in the entire presidency, to be quite honest, in my opinion, that I view as positive. I want to keep moving that energy forward with Ivan Ranklin. We're going to talk about it. I want to talk to you after the break about the question of, is the president of the United States the most powerful man in the world, in the brief moment where he might actually still may be that? I'm going to give an example. I want to talk about the G7 conference a little bit and get into the Ukraine war
right.
with you. Thank you so much, Ivan Ranklin.
There's a lot more to unpack, too. Yep.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this break. Please share the live feed, repost, reshare Alex Jones Live in the alexjonesstore.com for that methylene blue you know and love.
Three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday, limited edition, July 4th. Apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the American 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition, thealexjonesstore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you, because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our Irish sea moss. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked. It's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. I congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water. One of the biggest things you can do, take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to, like, sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to, like, a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now, okay? This is... because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, kind of not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it, and I know this is just another big victory. So thank you so much for all you and your support, and Bigley knocking it out of the park.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
You know, I think a lot of the time we forget that our elected officials are not kings, they're not rulers, they're not even celebrities. They're public servants. They're supposed to work for us and do the things on our behalf as our elected representative in the government that procure and provide for us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I am talking to Ivan Ranklin today about all these things and more, but I wanted to lend credence to what he was saying about J.D. Vance, right? Because me, as someone who's hypercritical of the administration, who's reneged on both my support for Trump and Vance, I look at it as something that, like, hey, I'm finally getting what I was promised in 2024. Even if it's 1% of it, I'd like to see that tick up kind of like a battery. I'm not going to be overly negative or suppressive, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we want to be realistic here, right? And we can white pill and say it's so great, we might get out of the war, might be able to do these things. The reality is a reality of a retaliation, of consequences, right? Because, you know, actions have consequences, and breaking from this U.S.-Israeli empire, New World Order, if you will, is going to possibly, you know, hurt some people very bad. We pray not, we hope not, but we've got kind of implicit threats. When Benjamin Netanyahu posts a photo of himself meeting with the head of Mossad, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that's not friendly. Right, Ivan?
Right, exactly. So a lot of people, when people look at the Israeli, Iran, United States involvement in Israel's war situation, this is what people don't discuss that needs to be discussed. Put your, I need everybody listening in to imagine you are Bibi Netanyahu. You've been in power for decades. And essentially, if you step out of being the prime minister, you're going to be placed in jail. Okay.
Yes.
And your entire legacy is completely destroyed. So understanding that, you want to retain power.
Yep.
And knowing the dynamics of the Knesset, you see that actually he's been delaying the no confidence vote that's been kind of on the agenda in the spring into the fall, this time frame, to remove him from office. And the vote comes down to, I believe it's, you need 61 votes in the Knesset. I'll have to do analysis again on this in order to initiate a no confidence vote against Bibi Netanyahu. Well, right now there's about 60 that, so there's about one vote shy of getting him over, getting the Knesset to move to remove Bibi Netanyahu via a no confidence vote as prime minister. The only way that Bibi slows that down or stops that from happening is he has to have American foreign aid funneled into his coffers so that he can dole some of that out to some of these members of the Knesset to make sure that they do not vote to remove him from office. And number two, the way you justify that globally to the American lemming Fox News viewing taxpayer,
right?
You go ahead and say that, oh, we're fighting a war against Iran, and that's why you need to send us foreign aid. So by having a peace deal with Iran, that removes the facade of having to send foreign aid to Israel. And that means, by extension, you are now guaranteeing the removal of Bibi Netanyahu,
right?
Which means you're not blessing Bibi by doing this, Donald Trump. And that means you're not going to be blessed. Conversely, when you're not blessed, that means you get Charlie Kirked, potentially. So that's, I think, the response
right
that could take place moving forward by Bibi Netanyahu if the America Firsters surrounding and advising Donald Trump have their our way. Bibi is going to want to respond up to and including kinetically in
right
order to preserve his position as the prime minister.
Right. What do
of
you
Israel?
What do you think that might look like, though? Because that's a very harrowing question. Of course, you can say, well, you know, Trump, there's been a lot of suspicious assassination attempts. We don't know anything about crooks still. Don't know anything about the guy on the golf course who was a Ukrainian recruiter.
Well, let's go ahead and take a look at the statement made yesterday by Dan Bongina. I mean, if you guys can pull that up.
What was the gist of
Dan?
We're working on it.
So the gist of Delicate Dan's statement yesterday, he said that expect to see more violence, essentially. And he even named Erica Kirk. And he kind of couched it as though, if this is my last broadcast,
what?
I just want to put it on record that I'm not on the side of demons.
What?
And so I don't know what that means. That's kind of indirect signaling that there could be some sort of a false flag coming up. I wonder who paid him to say that.
Wow.
Well, if we go back to the foreign agent registration ecosystem, I wonder how much of that several hundred million dollars of money that was used by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Yep.
Chief of Staff Aaron Shayevich of the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, that is manipulating the American quote unquote conservative ecosystem to spew content on behalf of Bibi. You notice the pivot occurred immediately after the peace deal was announced.
Yes.
And who's part of the ecosystem pivoting in their messaging? Dan Bongina.
Yep.
Larry Loomer. Mark Levin, right?
Yep.
Everyone from, what is it? I think I heard somebody call it the Israeli Reich, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the Israeli Reich crowd that is pushing for this.
Yeah. No, 110%. I mean, that's the thing, you know, master race, chosen people. You know, where do you kind of draw the line at a certain level? Because it's clear the interests of a Mark Levin, the interests of a Larry Loomer, a Ben Shapiro, these types of people that you mentioned.
It's really more accurate to call it the Bibi Reich, honestly.
Right. Right. Well, you look at all these people and the things that they do, and you look at Salem Media and all that, and the guy that runs that is literally a registered foreign agent. And it's the,
Chief Strategy Officer, Brad Parscale, who used to be the campaign manager for Donald Trump in 20. Yep.
No, absolutely.
You
look at all these people, kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. Look at all these folks coming out there. These are the folks that have been telling us, hey, you're a panicking. Hey, trust in Trump. Trust in Trump. Trust in Vance. What are you? You don't know what they know. You're not party to that information. We've just been holding the administration's feet to the fire and calling them out the entire time. You know, so like our position hasn't changed.
Rex, I don't know how many people you talk to in this administration across from cabinet level officials all the way down to the implementers. I think I'm talking to enough people, probably more than most people that are advising Trump at this point. But I don't want to disclose who I talk to, because if I did that, they would be gone within seconds of me disclosing that I talked to them.
Right, right. We have that Dan Bongino clip.
My relationships with them predate this administration. Sorry, go ahead.
No, we got that Dan Bongino clip where, you know, where he's making the harrowing statements. What was it he said about demons really quick? What was that? Really quick?
Don't quote me on it, but I think what he said was, but I briefly kind of quickly looked over it. It was that he was not on the side of demons.
Wow.
So if you want to play it, it's probably more appropriate.
Yeah,
no,
we're going
to
play it and do the review. I would just say the lady doth protest too much. It's like Hamlet. Okay.
Demons.
What are you talking about, dude? It's an admission of guilt. It's a Freudian slip. That's why I bring it up. Let's play that clip in full and react to it.
Don't worry about me. The only reason I'm even covering this beginning of the show is because when something else happens, I want to be sure you can look back on these episodes and go, Dan was right. He brought the evidence and the logic, and maybe we should have listened. I'm going to say it again. This is not some pity party for me. My life is wonderful. Thank you, Jesus Christ, for every blessing. I would change nothing. I am good.
Ooh.
I just want this all on the record because I'm sadly certain something else is going to happen.
Pause it. Any man who has to say I am good is not good. Like, they look like you have a gun, you know, behind the camera, and they're making him read lines. Like, it looks like a hostage scenario when he says something on the podcast. Like, how is
he supposed blessed
to
because I mean, I always translate that into, I mean, he's probably blessing BB with these statements, right?
Right.
And
right.
So he will be blessed, but those that don't bless BB, particularly those from Babylon BB, they won't be blessed.
Right. Go ahead and play the rest of it.
I'm making a joke, obviously.
Yesterday, you've seen all the hysteria from the chatterbox talking head class with the I have secret knowledge. I have a lot of information, but no
He's
evidence.
The talking
crowd.
Head class.
Sadly, the victim of a lot of this is Erica Kirk and others. As more threats materialize to her life. Now, I mean, I've never seen anything like this in my life. Her husband, Charlie, who we all knew, guys, you put that, yeah, thank you. Report links anti-Christian extremism and assassination culture to alleged plot against Erica Kirk. Yeah, another one.
Here, pause it. And that's a good freeze frame because he's got his head down. He's like, man, I got to figure out what else I'm going to say. But he talks about these things. And my favorite Dan Bongino quote or clip is him saying, you know, you guys in the talk show media, you're just popcorn throwers and the guys in the real arena that are sparring and hitting each other. And the thing is, it's sparring. It's a fake fight. Number one, he admits it. I'm quoting him verbatim, by the way. But he talks about it. You're a popcorn thrower now. This is popcorn throwing supreme.
He's part of the pundit class.
Yes.
I mean, and he always, notice how he always cites Faux News, the go-to. And there he goes, just going to town.
The tie kick,
in the
jump
popcorn
kick.
Popcorn class.
Yeah, that's a crazy clip, man. That's wild.
Meanwhile, when confronted and asked the question of, why did you block me, Dan, delicate Dan Bongino, he runs off. And then he blocks more people. I don't know if you saw that a few months ago where
he blocked me.
I wanted to ask him the question, why did you block me, Dan? Because I saw him in person and he kind of waved it off and he got, I took ownership of his Twitter account for a couple weeks. All he did was post memes of me.
He was obsessed with
and,
you.
Yeah.
For real. Okay. Go back to the clip.
Friends. Notice I didn't say folks here. I said friends. I did that for a reason. Because there are some people here who are not our friends. You can watch like anyone else, but you're not our friends.
Yup. Howdy.
Erica Kirk watched her husband assassinated, murdered in the coldest of blood on basically what we would consider live TV these days, the internet. Sane, sound, moral, ethical people would empathize and feel really horrible to have a young man like that, a real patriot and a hero and an unbelievably good friend to me, to have his life cut short for some senseless ideological crap.
Pause it. Who is he convincing here? Who is he convincing himself of the official story, official narrative? at a gut level, like my dad says, like I've been watching people talking to a camera and a microphone for literally as long as I've been alive. I don't buy 1 second of this. Like whatever he's selling me, I just can't buy it. Right. Like, I think that's a feeling a lot of people have about the official story. What are your thoughts?
No, so, I mean, I'm going to agree with him on many issues, right? Especially on this one. I mean, I don't know if you knew Charlie Kirk. I crossed paths with him on many occasions dating back to 2018. So when I saw that happen to me, I was furious, right? And a lot of people do the fight or flight response. I was pissed that happened to him. Cause that's kind of my initial gut reaction.
Of course.
In a kind of rage of fury because I couldn't do anything. Like I wasn't anywhere near it. Like I'm an action guy and unfortunately I couldn't do that. So, and you've noticed if people have been tracking me closely enough, I've never commented about all these things going out about Erica Kirk. I've never met her, right?
Right.
And I don't go after women on really any issue. It comes down to, as a man, I'm a kind of traditional guy. I go after the biggest bullies that are out there, particularly if you're a man. And it happens to be Dan Bongino because he's been wrong and he's been weak on the issues. And so for me, while I agree with him that completely tragic what happened,
sure.
How about we expend energy on finding out who did it,
yep.
How it happened. And I get it. It's the spouse. Erica can forgive and forget. Well, I can choose my path as well, right? And my path is I want to find out in detail so that it is compelling and convincing exactly what took place, regardless of where the chips fall, okay? Now, it very well could be that a jury is going to be convinced that it was a 30-odd six that was just captured like a steel trap in his spine. If the forensics show it, whatever. I'm not convinced that took place. I am of the opinion, and I haven't done as much deep dive research as a lot of folks that are out there. I've kind of stayed out of it. But what I did find intriguing as I did research on the pagers that were used by BB and his Mossad, right, that he just showed a picture of, they were the ones that deployed 1,000 pagers, which are a little bit larger in size than the Rode mic that was used by Charlie Kirk on that day. And those pagers were pretty effective. And all that was needed is, I think it was 3 to 6 grams of what's known as petin. It's an explosive. That's pretty dense and it's pretty volatile and explosive, right?
Right.
So it begs the question. I used to teach intelligence analysis. And when you're doing a hypothesis, when you're trying to come up with a analytic conclusion on what took place on an intel question, in this instance, it would be what happened and how was Charlie Kirk killed? You have to come up with the most number of hypotheses and then rack and stack evidence to start excluding hypotheses on what could have taken place.
Right.
I don't see that our FBI has done that. There needs to be a maximum range of hypotheses. It could have been an acorn that exploded, right? I mean, obviously there's no evidence to support that. So then you start to push away those hypotheses.
But
you want to first start off with the maximum number of hypotheses. And the one to me that hasn't been fleshed out fully and excluded and discounted as inconsistent is the, what if somebody used the same technology as in the pagers, compacted it in the mic, and then created that a small, tiny shape charge to create the physiological impact that took place in Charlie's body. A lot of more people are talking about that, and it would be nice to get an assessment, or not even an assessment, for the investigators to look down that path.
Right, and that's the thing.
But because that investigation is not being done, that is filled in by Candace Owens, by... I mean, you name the individuals.
Well,
I think Stu Peters went down that path and other people are going down that path.
The thing is, when you tell people they're not allowed to ask questions, and like Dan Bongino, he says the Epstein files aren't real. And then he tells us to believe the official story. What's going on? That's the thing, is like, how many times are we going to get shown objective reality, what's in the files, and then told, oh, that's a nothing burger. It's not a big deal. Epstein actually didn't traffic anybody. And then you got Pam Bondi on footage, undercover tape, saying there's thousands of hours of footage. Oh, it's so horrible. And then you get her saying, oh, that was actually just child porn that Jeffrey Epstein had, that evil, sick man. We're never going to be able to release it because of that. And then you have a whole class of people on the internet, Michael Tracy, Andrew Wilson, these types of folks that do what I call Epstein apologetics, that say, oh, he's just a pervert, not really a PDF file, whatever. And they're emboldened and allowed to do that through Bongino, through the administration, saying that that's not real. I think people are outraged by that. I know I am, in the same way. Hey, Charlie Kirk, we got questions. You're not willing to answer them. You don't want to go down that road. Why? Why is that? Explain that to us. And they can't. They can't do it. We just got Dan Bongino doing the elbows, doing the tie kick, and telling us, you know, that don't be a popcorn thrower while he does mass media. And this is the reality of the modern administration. We want results. We don't want talk. Dan Bongino, he's put in as the deputy director of the FBI.
The deputy delegate.
Okay. Deputy delegate. Break
he's
that
so
down.
Delicate. No, delicate as in very delicate. You know, the song by her name? The famous singer. She got a song called Delicate. I can't remember the
delicate
name of these
Dan.
People.
Delicate Dan. Maybe two ply.
Yeah, because he blocks everybody that says something that is counter to what he was told to promote by his handlers.
Right. Yep. And that's the thing.
Absolutely.
Like, these people, they put on the Patriot costume and they pretend to have agency, but they represent something else. Right. And that's the thing is, like, we may be flawed people, but we're real and we support America. Right. And we support America first. And what that means is what we voted for in 2024. And I say this all the time because of how critical I am. I voted in 2024 on the basis of good policy. Good policy. They just have to actually be willing to implement it. What would you say?
Well, you're good. Yeah, go ahead.
No, what would you say to that?
Go ahead. I was going to say that your good policy is not good policy for the BB ecosystem, my friend.
You're right.
I can't stress this enough.
Ooh.
Watch what Mark Levin does.
Yeah.
Watch what Dan Bongino does. Watch what Laura Loomer does. Watch what Ben Shapiro does. Watch what Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham do as it applies to this peace deal with Iran that Donald Trump is trying to actually sign off on.
Yes.
They immediately go back to their never Trump ways. Meanwhile, the OG Trumpers, I'm going to say it this way. I want people to start using this instead. Instead of like the MAGA versus America First, it was the OG MAGA folks actually stand for Make America Great Again. That's you. That's your dad. That's me. That's all the listeners here. The ones that are the new MAGA are the Miriam Adelson Governs America crowd. That's what their MAGA stands for.
Yep.
And that means that they have to support BB. And the MAGA or OG MAGA crowd is the America First crowd. But the Miriam Adelson Governs America crowd, guess what? They're more in line with her original country of citizenship. Well, her second, I guess, technically, because she was born in Palestine, but became an Israeli citizen when that state was created. Okay.
Wow.
So that's the differentiator. And you're going to see clearly that those that are trying to bless BB are the ones that are not trying to bless America.
Yes, I think that's a key distinction to draw. It's where do your true loyalties lie? You can't have dual loyalty. You're loyal to one or the other. That's biblical, right? Can't serve two masters and all of that. And, you know, it's really funny.
And that's what BB's doing right now is he's basically pivoting from trying to convince Trump, since Trump is essentially rejected the movement towards a perpetual endless war with Iran. And instead, BB's going and trying to influence the members of the House Armed Services Committee. And when everybody started yelling and screaming, we don't want to have a joint agreement and essentially fusing the U.S. military with the IDF. Then what did, another person, what did BB do then? He went over to good old boy Tom Cotton on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence to fuse intel, so that you couldn't avoid sharing intelligence with BB. And guess what happens next? Next thing you hear as, what's his name? Pulte, who's supposed to be the incoming acting director of national intelligence as early as tomorrow, wink, wink. I'm hearing that Tulsi's last day is today, meaning it already occurred.
Right.
And so Bill Pulte was rejected by the entire uniparty establishment in the Senate. And instead, the uniparty said, oh, Jay Clayton, we'll support Jay Clayton to be the director of national intelligence. And even Tom Cotton, the chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, said, let's have a hearing. and we'll just kind of run him through quickly, just like we did with John Ratcliffe, the Mossad stenographer, right? Is Jay Clayton also going to be a Mossad stenographer? I wonder if that's going to be the case. Based on indicators, I would say so. And that's why they're trying to push him through. And maybe Donald Trump realized that, we got something here. Let's get Pulte in there so that he can declassify everything that Tulsi was trying to, but was not able to because of John Ratcliffe and Aaron Lucas and Michael Ellis, the deputy DNI and the deputy CI directors were blocking from being released. And so now Pulte, who doesn't have political aspirations, could go in there, scorched earth, just like Rick Grenell did in the first term, and declassify everything and potentially create more criminal referrals that Todd Blanche is probably not going to act on.
What do you think in closing on Section 224 and the threat that poses to our country, having an executive agent, you know, kind of a Secretary of War equivalent that answers to that guy and that guy alone above everyone else at DOD?
Yeah, so just to kind of add on to what I just said, BB sees that Trump is backing away from supporting him, and so he has to find another mechanism, meaning the legislative branch, to go ahead and pass laws to make sure through the Speaker, Mike Johnson we talked about, through John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, unless J.D. Vance steps in, to go ahead and pass laws that fuse that unlimited funds, sends money over to BB to keep him in power,
right,
and then also undermine our national security. And I think more and more people are seeing it. I'm glad Elon and you guys is allowing us to talk about this. You guys are talking about it. I think enough people are now waking up within the Republican or I guess conservative voting base that we don't like it.
Yeah.
And it's no longer taboo to say BB bad, right?
100%.
And seeing what he's doing.
Yeah, we want an end to it. We want an end. We want to separate and be our own constitutional republic again, not a part of somebody else's empire. Thank you so much, Ivan Ranklin, for covering the waterfront with me. I really do value your time and your experience. And you're actually up there on the hill confronting these swamp creatures about the things they actually need to be doing. I really do appreciate that. Everyone follow Ivan Ranklin at Ivan Ranklin on X right there.
Ivan, your heart for truth and justice in a sea of retards, cowards, and traitors.
Amen to that.
Washington, D.C.
Amen to that. It was great to see you up in Grand Rapids, man. I really appreciated our time together.
Same.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I appreciate you, man.
Thank you so
much. Thanks for having me on, Rex.
All right, take it easy. That was Ivan Ranklin. I'm going to be getting into the Ukraine war after we come back from break in the third hour. Looking forward to getting into all of that with y'all. So much more news to cover. I'll be here, your host, Rex Jones, of the Alex Jones Network War Room.
Folks, Doc Bigley here, and today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me.
I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.